When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, listeners. Before we get to the latest episode of Think Inclusive, I want to tell you about another show I think you'll enjoy. I'm Savita Sundar, and I'm the host of Inclusive Occupations, sharing stories of not just being invited to the party, but dancing. This podcast is a space for school-based occupational therapists, speech-language pathologists, and other educators and related service providers to be informed and inspired to be agents of inclusion in their communities. In the latest season, Season 2 of Inclusive Occupations, we will be listening to the stories of scholars and exemplars who have taken the years of research on inclusive education and made changes in their communities by putting it into action. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts such as Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and so on. Let's get ready for the podcast for inclusionists, Think Inclusive, brought to you by MCIE.
From MCIE.
Meet Maisie Eddings, author and dentist.
I've always loved writing, and I was like really, really active in creative writing clubs and stuff in middle school and high school. Always been an avid reader.
But in the book she read, one thing that she wanted to see more of was
characters that struggled with their mental health like I was doing. And I wanted to see a story where, somebody was hurting, but they were still able to learn to love themselves and accept love from other people.
And so with her book, A Brush with Love, Maisie
wanted people that don't experience anxiety to kind of have a new perspective on what living with it can feel like.
My name is Tim Villegas, and you are listening to Think Inclusive, presented by MCIE. This podcast exists to build bridges between families, educators, and disability rights advocates to create a shared understanding of inclusive education and what inclusion looks like in the real world. For this episode, we talk with Maisie Eddings, the neurodiverse author of A Brush with Love, a romance novel set in dental school. We talk about why she wanted to write neurodiverse characters in her books, how she sees herself in the characters of A Brush with Love, and what she hopes her readers take away from the book on how to support people living with anxiety. Thank you so much for listening. And now, my interview with Maisie Eddings. All right, today on the Think Inclusive podcast, we'd like to welcome Maisie Eddings, who is a neurodiverse author, dentist, and most importantly, stage mom to her cats, Yaya and Zadie. She can most often be found... You're laughing.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. This is great. She can most often be found reading romance novels under her weighted blanket and asking her boyfriend to bring her snacks. She's made it her personal mission in life to destigmatize mental health issues and write love stories for every brain. Maisie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I always forget I have the cat part in there, and it cracks me up too. I don't know. Sorry about that.
No, it's great. Yeah, not everyone can. I don't want to put down anyone else. But I'm just saying, some bios are well crafted in humor, and this is one of them.
Oh,
I really enjoyed reading it.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much. Yeah.
A little bit of confession. You know, when I forget who is from someone from your publicist reached out to me and said, I have a love story for you to read. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. Cause it's just not my it's not my typical genre. We can talk about that a little bit mm-hmm. later too, but, I was really intrigued by the story and your mission, right? Your mission to destigmatize mental health. So, before we get into what the book is about and kind of what you're talking about, would you just introduce yourself and the premise of the novel to our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for taking a chance on a romance novel. I know that there's kind of a lot of perceptions on what the genre is and stuff. So I appreciate that step out of your comfort zone. I, like you said, I'm neurodiverse. I have a plethora of things going up in the old noggin, ADHD, autism, and anxiety. And anxiety has always been, it's funny because I got my ADHD and my autism diagnoses later in life, but anxiety has always been something since I was I remember having my first panic attack at 6 years old in first grade, right? So it's this very constant thing that I've experienced in my life. I went into dental school, I guess it was the fall of 2018 is when I started, and I was just experiencing really some of the worst anxiety and depression that, I'd experienced in my life at that point. Reading romance novels was this huge balm to my anxiety because you had this, you went in knowing that there was going to be this happy ending, right? So there was less of this fear or pressure that things would go bad. But one thing that I wanted to see more of was characters that struggled with their mental health like I was doing. And I wanted to see a story where, somebody was hurting, but they were still able to learn to love themselves and accept love from other people. They were hurting and continued to hurt, but still had this happy ending, and things like that. And so I decided to write A Brush with Love. It's set in dental school. And it looks at two people who kind of have diverging, passions in life. And so, Harper, the main character, she has a very, almost a very severe, anxiety disorder that she hides and is untreated. And she has this very strict goal of wanting to become an oral surgeon. And then there's Dan, who's her love interest, and he is participating in dental school kind of out of this feeling of familial obligation and guilt. And so, the story looks at how they learn to love each other, themselves, and also find a passion and love for, a career or something that they're doing every day of their lives. I think that was really long winded, but, that was kind of where the idea came from.
Yeah. And so as I was reading the book, I was going, cause I see in your bio that you are still a dentist.
Yeah. I graduate in May. So I'm really excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, I was just curious how closely aligned, and you don't have to answer this question, mm-hmm. but, if you want to, how closely aligned are you and Harper? Cause it mm-hmm. seems like that would be the logical connection, but
yeah, when I told my family actually that the book was happening, they're like, so you wrote a memoir? And I was like, no, it's not. It's not like that at all. I think what was really interesting. So it's really not autobiographical. I guess like the portions of myself that I see in this book are like the way that Harper's anxiety and anxiety attacks physically manifest. Because I was really, you know, I was having like anxiety or panic attacks, like every day, sometimes multiple times a day. I couldn't sleep. I, you know, awful insomnia. Like I was really physically hurting so badly. And I wanted to kind of capture how consuming, you know, an anxiety disorder can be. So that portion does come from my own experiences. But no, it's not autobiographical. If anything, I think I was really questioning, if I was on the right path with dental school, more like how Dan was and stuff. But they popped into my head pretty fully formed as like very unique individuals with unique voices. And I think that was what kind of felt so like healing or cathartic about writing their story is like, it was like watching a movie of people that you relate to and seeing them find their happy ending. And that's how writing it felt. So it was like a very like cathartic way to see like, okay, so they can make it through. I can make it through. There's like a very big separation between me and my characters. I feel like I'm just a scribe and they're just telling me what I have to put down on paper.
That's really interesting. And, you know, I've never written fiction, but I do love reading books about writing. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's a very common theme mm-hmm. in writing, especially fiction, is that it's like I'm just kind of the vessel.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Truly, that's exactly how it feels.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I wanted to go back to what you said about, your experience with anxiety and how that informed you writing specifically what it was like for Harper, because as a reader, it was very evident. It was so vivid and tangible. I could almost feel the anxiety as I was reading the descriptions. Mm-hmm. And so like, was that your goal? For the reader to really experience, because that I feel like, as far as that's something that's very unique about the book, is that when anxiety or mental health issues come up, specifically anxiety in fiction, mm-hmm. That it doesn't always land, mm-hmm. and I felt like this really did.
Oh well, thank you. I appreciate that so much. It was really important to me. I wanted to kind of capture like that visceral experience because, you know, I feel like we talk about mental health and mental illness and kind of our conversations. And I think this is starting to change, but a lot of the conversations kind of have this lens of it's happening in a person's head. It's like a very internal thing. And I don't think that's true, you know, so I wanted to like kind of dig deep and I wanted to pay like homage to kind of the physical and like physiological struggles of carrying the weight of anxiety on a daily basis. And how it really does add this extra layer of like, I don't even know what the word is, like grit or just like white knuckling it. You know, I just wanted to like, I wanted to honor that experience because I think it's very real for people with anxiety. But I also I really wanted so badly to make, I guess, I wanted people that don't experience anxiety to kind of have a new perspective on what living with it can feel like. And I felt like going into like kind of a visceral or like sensual discussion or sensory discussion, excuse me, about that would be like a good way to make it relatable. Cause everybody knows what it feels like when their heart's thumping or when like adrenaline prickles through you, you know? So yeah, that's what I was trying to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, also in the book, I think you said it at the beginning in your description, Harper hides it, mm-hmm. right? She doesn't want people to know. And especially from Dan, when she first meet him, like mm-hmm. she's afraid that he's going to see this and be like, oh, mm-hmm. she's weird. I'm not going to engage. Mm-hmm. What did you want the reader to learn, if anything, from like how Dan and Harper interacted with each other and Dan learning about the anxiety and then learning how to support? Because there's parts of that where he like completely messes up to deal with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I think that's true with any relationship. As you learn how to love your partner, and how to, like, in any relationship, you learn how to love somebody in a way that they need and stuff. And so it's a lot of trial and error, and there's no shame in that. Like, you can't automatically get it right off the bat. But, I lost my train of thought there for a second.
It's okay.
Okay. So I think that we look at, there's a lot of shame still and stigma around mental health, and even just having conversations about it, right? It kind of feel like people feel a little uncomfortable and stuff like that. And we internalize that as people that might, you know, carry that or have anxiety or depression or bipolar or any of these, you know, things that society so often like tells us not to talk about. And so I kind of wanted to show that internalization and that like internalized ableism and stuff, because it is scary to grapple with something as consuming as like anxiety, but then also feel shame around it, right? Like, it, you know, it's kind of like this idea that like you should be able to handle your life better, or you should be able to just not like flip out over all this stuff. And that's just not the reality. Like, you know, you can get really easily triggered by things that life throws at you, or it's just out of your control a lot of times. It's a chemical imbalance. A lot of it is rooted in like trauma response and stuff like that. And so I wanted to show somebody that, like, I think with Harper's journey is I wanted her to learn to kind of shed that shame a little bit and like be open with people. And so, you know, Dan as a partner was somebody that was like very open to learning how to love her best. And he like, he messes up and he fails, but it doesn't mean that he's not willing to like keep trying. And together they kind of like learn how to love each other that way. I wanted to kind of highlight like the shame that we carry in us and how it kind of prevents us from fully loving ourselves or being loved by others.
Another aspect of the book is, you know, not only anxiety, but you kind of tackle other topics like sexism and ableism, like you just mentioned. I don't want to spoil the book for anyone, but, you know, Harper confronts a very sexist patient in the book.
Yeah.
And not only that, but Dan is with her at that time. Mm-hmm. And Dan also kind of doesn't handle it that great.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, I'm like, did this actually happen, number one? Or is this something that you like had heard or experienced yourself in a personal way? It doesn't have to be like exactly the thing, but I thought about it as I was reading this book.
I was shocked by how much sexism I faced, or I've experienced kind of in my field. Like, I think it's very I don't know. Maybe I'm just like really naive, but I didn't kind of expect it as much as I feel like it's been a part of my life. Patients, they tell me they don't want a woman dentist, you know, and they request like changes and stuff like that. They don't, you know, trust women to care for them. I think I've also heard experiences where, and this has happened with other people too, where so a patient gets transferred from a woman provider to a male, and the male's experience with that patient is night and day different. Like, there's mutual respect, and it's like, you know, they're laughing and joking, and like there's no issues and stuff. And so I still think that there's like a lot of internalized misogyny in medicine, and even as like people seeking care. And so then it becomes like this ethical dilemma, right? Because it's like, you need to honor a patient's autonomy, but you're also like, but wait, like, you know, I have the skills to do this and everything. But I think even even in the structure of a dental school, there's a lot of sexism. And you know, you look at oral surgery in particular is a field where I think that there's like a lot of gatekeeping against women progressing in the field. So you have some women that are like very high in the field, but they also kind of like internalize that misogyny, and they gatekeep and the way that they interact with women seeking mentorship and stuff. You know, and then, you know, I've had faculty members make really lewd comments to me while I'm working on a patient. So like, you know, I was taking an impression where you have to kind of like massage somebody's cheeks, and I was doing it to this man, and then my faculty was like, oh, not a bad way to start your morning, like having a pretty girl massage your face, right? Something to tell the guys later. And it was just like, I just felt so small, right? You know, it's just like, and it's gross. And it like, it automatically like kind of demeans my position and like my role as like a caregiver. So yeah, I was really shocked by that being in medicine and stuff. And so yeah, I wanted to highlight that because that was so frustrating and still continues to be.
Well, that's great. That I'm so glad you included it, because again, I'm learning something new. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but yeah, that was really interesting. And then I wanted to ask you, like, how did you feel like about ableism? How did you want to address it in the book? Because, you know, I think that, you know, well, I'll just speak for myself, you know, like I've been working through ableism for years. It feels like I still am. Despite all of the people I've talked to, despite, you know, me being an educator, I think that it's a long road to undo all the stuff that we've learned about ability, right? So, you know, how did you want to portray that in the story with, you know, with Dan and Harper and her and the friends?
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that too. Like, there's just always constant like unpacking of these things that you have internalized and everything like that. That was like one of the trickier aspects too, because, you know, in kind of looking at it through the lens of the story, I had to confront a lot of like my own internalized perceptions of, you know, things that I didn't even realize were kind of ableist about how I like saw myself and my own role in my own journey. But, you know, I wanted to show, I think like in a lot of ways we see people in medicine and we automatically assume that they kind of are above, I don't know what the right word is, kind of above being, you know, sick in a lot of ways or having, you know, mental health issues. You kind of assume that they have like a perfect bill of health in a lot of ways because that's the role that they're kind of cast in society. And so I wanted to like look at through Harper's journey on how she has internalized this idea that she needs to be put together and perfect, or otherwise she's incapable of helping other people, and kind of address that idea that you can hurt and you can still help people. You can hurt or, you know, have struggles with mental illness or manifestations of it, and still be worthy of love and still be worthy of a career that fulfills you and things like that. And so, yeah. And I think just like, there's also this idea that people won't love you anymore or trust you and you feel like a burden, if you kind of express just how deeply you're being affected by things like, anxiety or depression, which is why she was really closed off about it, even with the people closest in her life.
I just kept, when I'm reading this, when I was reading the book, it's hard because both Dan and Harper, I feel like, are searching for belonging, right? And, like they, I mean, it's so hard to like let people love you, you know? You know, and so I guess that's very relatable. I mean, it's relatable for everyone, I think, you know, because there's a part of you that like you don't want to let people know that that's there, whatever that part is, right? And so I just felt like that came across really well in the book. And of course, you know, we are talking about a romance novel. So let's talk about happy endings.
Yeah.
because I honestly wasn't sure, you know, again, I'm not too familiar with the romance genre. Towards the end of the book, I'm like, oh my gosh, is this, you know, like what's going to happen here? Like, are we actually going to have a happy ending here? And, so I don't think we can, you know, it's not, no spoilers that there is one, right? So, and so would you consider this in like the romance genre?
Yes, definitely. I think, And so I think, you know, interestingly enough, there's like a lot of, there's a lot of stigma and like a lot of, kind of perceptions of like the romance genre, right? And it's the punchline to a lot of jokes, and it's, you know, you kind of, you know, everybody has like the same three romance novels that they recycle every February for articles, you know, in the Atlantic or whatever, where it's like 50 Shades of Grey, Pride and Prejudice, and then I don't know, something else. But you know, we have like this very specific frame of mind with it. And I think that that does such a disservice to all that the genre offers. There's so many unique and just like incredible stories, and you know, just like that follow the tenets that, you know, there's a central theme of people falling in love and people getting a happy ending. And I think that's so awesome, right? Because it's like people fall in love in countless ways, and then we get to see that through these stories. So yeah, this is definitely, it's a definitely a romance novel. You know, it's definitely about Harper and Dan loving each other, and then it's also about how they love themselves and accept themselves and learn to accept love, and get that happy ending there.
what are some of your favorite things to read, you know, as a writer, like what as, cause I mean, you're very, it sounds like you're very busy. So number one, you know, like how much time do you actually get to read? But yeah, what are some of your favorites?
I haven't had as much time to read lately because, I've been on this deadline for a book and I am like dying with it. So like, I probably haven't read a book in about a month or so, which is like the longest stretch I've gone. But yeah, I mean, for a while there, I was like, before I started writing my own books, I was reading about a book a day. It was like very much like, I need to get as far away from my day to day and just like zoom into other, worlds and stuff like that. It probably wasn't the healthiest coping strategy. I mean, I guess there could be worse, but I think that I'm a huge romance genre reader, and it's what I primarily read. And I think that there are some amazing voices out there that are totally highlighting and spotlighting neurodivergencies, and you know, mental health, and also kind of looking at like, you know, just putting disabled characters front and center of these love stories, which I think is so, it shouldn't be groundbreaking, but it is, because for so long, you know, you've kind of heard that like, or not heard, but it's kind of this perpetuated idea that like disabled characters aren't the main characters. And so some books that come to mind, so author, Chloe Visa, she is, she's a romance novelist, and she's also autistic, and she writes some of like the best neurodiverse characters and love stories. And I think that she is like just a groundbreaking author, and she has a series called the Bergman series. And I think there's going to be, what is it, 7 books total or something like that. And yeah, so she's done such an amazing job, like looking at autism, and, you know, she does just fabulous rep. Another author that comes to mind is Talia Hibbert. She writes, I actually have one of the books right here, but that's not on purpose, but it's called Take a Hint, Danny Brown. And this one has, really great ADHD rep, for one of the main characters. And so, you know, she's exploring love and neurodiversities and a lot of various other disabilities and stuff, and her characters always like coming through and getting their happy endings. And then outside of that, I've actually been reading a lot of poetry lately, which I don't know why. I guess because it's like kind of easily like consumable, you know, when you have like a shorter poem, but then you can like sit and think about it and stuff. And I've been reading a lot of Audre Lorde's work and Margaret Atwood's book of poetry and stuff. But I wish I read more nonfiction. I just like can't focus on it very well. Like my brain just goes like, it just wanders away.
I'm curious, you know, what started you on the path to writing? Because it sounds like you're an avid reader, mm-hmm. right? So that probably has, and you've probably been like that for a long time, mm-hmm. Going through your path to being a dentist, like how did you get onto the path for writing?
Yeah. It was a really weird, divergency from like kind of what I expected my life to take. I've always loved writing, and I was like really, really active in, creative writing clubs and stuff in middle school and high school. But it was, you know, those were all like short stories or, you know, sort of like just little snippets of scenes that I would write. And like you said, I've always been an avid reader, and I tried, you know, writing books, and I was just like, I just don't even understand how somebody does that. Like, what, how do you figure it out? You know? And so then, it wasn't something that I like pursued or like made time for as much as I would have liked, or I wish I had in undergrad and stuff like that. But I was taking literature analysis courses when I could. Those were always just like my fun classes. And then when I got to dental school, I really was so overwhelmed and so immersed in like the toothy world. And like, I needed an escape. And so that's when I was like I said, I was reading like a book a day of, just consuming romance novels at such a rapid rate. I was so desperate for an escape. I took up like marathon running, and I was like listening to like, romance, audiobooks while I was running. And I was like, so that's how I finished those things. But yeah, I think I was just like really looking for an escape. And then I wanted to write a story that kind of reflected, like I said, my own struggles or like the, you know, the consumingness of, anxiety. And also in this world that I was like so ingrained in, but see these people win and get that happy ending and find a lot of passion and success in their lives. Yeah. And so that was the way it went. And then I just couldn't stop writing. So, now I have like 5 books coming out over the next 2 years. So I've been really busy writing all of those.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm
that's great.
Yeah. I'm really grateful for the opportunity, to write. I've like, nothing has ever felt more fulfilling than, getting to tell stories and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been a real joy.
So you're still planning on, you know, yeah. graduating dentist,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. I'm going to do both.
Okay. No, I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I love it. where can people find your book? I don't remember when it comes out. Does it come out in March?
March 1st. Yep.
March 1st. Okay.
Yeah. So it's coming. It's anywhere books are sold. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Book Depository does free shipping worldwide, which is cool. And then the audiobook is coming out. Also anywhere books are sold, Audible, Libro, stuff like that. And then if you want to follow along on, you know, this wild ride that I'm going, my website is MaisieEddings.com, and I'm on Twitter pretty frequently, and that's like at FoxyGrandpa27 or something, like very non-professional. Yeah, Foxy Grandpa, I know.
is that an inside joke or something?
No,
or?
I mean, okay, it literally is from that SpongeBob episode where he like... But I I made it, you know, back in college or whatever. And then that's how I started like connecting with other authors. I'm like, well, I can't change it now. Like, you know,
Foxy Grandpa.
So yeah. I was like, every time I say that, I'm like, should I change it? Maybe I should. But anyway, yeah. So it's from the SpongeBob episode where he has the hat that says like world's foxiest grandpa or something. It just cracked me up. It's so silly. And then on Instagram, at Maisie Eddings.
Okay. Not Foxy Grandpa.
Not Foxy Maisie Grandpa. Eddings. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's okay.
Because somebody took it. Somebody already had that handle. I was devastated.
Man.
I know.
Man.
Yeah.
So are any of your future books feature Harper and Dan, or is that story over for now?
Their love story is, they're not central, but they make little cameos. So the next three books follow the friend groups. So the second one, the second one follows Lizzie. And that one comes out September 6th of this year. And she has ADHD, and she gets wrapped up in an underground erotic baking like scheme that just, you know, spirals out of control. I could not believe that they like let me get away with that one, but they did.
Erotic baking.
Yeah, like
underground erotic baking.
Underground,
okay.
Like back alley. Yeah, it's so yeah, that one's really fun. And then the third one I'm finishing up now. So Harper and Dan will make little cameos. And maybe one day I'll write, you know, something more for them. But as for right now, like I'm really happy with where their story ended, and then just like the little tiny progress we see in the other books.
Maisie Eddings, it was a pleasure to have you on the Think Inclusive podcast. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was so fun.
Think Inclusive is written, edited, and sound designed by Tim Villegas, and is a production of MCIE. Original music by Miles Kredich. I hoped you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, one way you can help our podcast grow is to share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. And if you haven't already, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Special thanks to our patrons Veronica E., Sonia A., Pamela P., Mark C., Kathy B., Kathleen T., Jarrett T., Gabby M., and Aaron P. for their support of Think Inclusive. Another way you can help support Think Inclusive is to become a patron. We are just a few patrons away from producing an additional monthly episode only on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thinkinclusivepodcasts and become a patron today. For more information about inclusive education or to learn how MCIE can partner with you in your school or district, visit mcie.org. We will be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks for your time and attention, and remember, inclusion always works.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.